what do you think is the biggest obstacle for someone who is currently having a chronic disease?
Brain retraining isn't just about thinking positively. It might be about retraining you to figure out what your needs are that day. So then they would be more equipped when they went into the emotion to not only have more capacity in the nervous system to handle what was coming up, but to also have a context for, in my opinion, is that the immune system is literally reflecting, it's acting out the way that you respond to life itself. We're unplugged. We have become unplugged in a multitude of ways.
Hi, Kat. Welcome. Thank you for joining me. And I was actually, before I was looking on the internet and I saw your story a little bit, and it seemed that we have pretty similar timelines in which we struggle with chronic disease. Could you tell me a little bit about your story?
Sure. Yeah. So I really started getting symptomatic back in 2003. So over 20 years ago. And really it started, it looked like parasites and dysautonomia and POTS and chronic fatigue, not knowing why, especially back then, nobody knew why. And that went on for many years. I was able to work a little bit for a handful of years, and then I had some other infection hit me, and then it was like overnight I was bedbound. And truly, I went from being able to exercise and work, and within 48 hours, life was never the same. And that went on not just for days or weeks or months, but years. And I spent the next decade trying to figure out what was going on with me. And, you know, I got all of the typical diagnoses like Lyme disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, dysautonomia, POTS, mold toxicity, you know, hormone issues. But the system at that time wasn't focused on nervous system regulation as a core solution. And so, you know, it cost me many tens of thousands of dollars to really not get very far. You know, I would get a little better, a little worse, a little better, a little worse. And then one day I sort of took a step back. Nothing was working. It was a pretty dark moment, actually, but I thought about when I used to work as a physical therapist, and I thought about people stuck in chronic pain, and I knew that the brain was really responsible for processing pain. And I had a thought, well, what if the brain is really responsible for processing infection and toxicity, even though nobody is saying this? And so I started some of the exercises that I used to teach for the brain a decade prior for chronic pain. And sure enough, they started to help me. Like right away, I was able to tolerate light and sound. I had the ability to drive, come back. I was able to walk a little more. And, you know, seriously, within a week, I got a decent amount of function back just by doing certain brain exercises that are in the field of functional neurology. They're eye exercises that focus on the brain. And so that set me on a different journey to research everything I could about the brain and the nervous system and what modalities were out there. And so I learned different brain retraining techniques. I took a certification through something known as Psych-K that works on the subconscious. And then I learned about DNRS and the lightning process and memory reconsolidation, and started practicing that. I learned, I used to teach a lot of vagus nerve toning as a physical therapist. And so I started bringing that back in. I was already trained as a clinical somatics practitioner. I just wasn't using it for myself. I brought that back in. So I really brought in a lot of different disciplines, primarily focused on the brain and nervous system, and was able to get my function back. And then I started teaching people how to do it.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And before I was like so overwhelmed with the beginning, everything was working. So thank you so much for being here with me.
Yes.
Hey, and I was so surprised because a few years ago I had a donation-based program, and then suddenly I was coming in some more people and they came via your website. And I was like, what is this? I'm not used to anything like this. Like, usually people steal and they don't refer. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. But I never heard of your program Primal Trust before. I did have a meditation indeed, what we mentioned before, Primal Trust. And that was basically because there was this osteopath in Germany, and she did some meditations with me to guide me back to a state of trust, because she noticed that there wasn't any in me. That's how I came up with that meditation. But I was just so, wow, like, who is this? And I started looking a little bit into you, and I never really got the time to thank you for that and to ask you, why did you do that?
Yeah, because I promised myself that when I got better, I would help as many people as I could. I chose to create a program that costs money. And a lot of people can't afford a program that costs money. And you were offering one at the time that was free. And I thought, well, what I can't help, surely he can. And, together we create more healing. And I also felt that your resonance was so similar to mine, your frequency, your focus, your mission, that I trusted what you were doing, and it felt like the right thing to do because I'm not going to be a match for everybody, and I wanted people to have all of the resources that they could, because I know there was a time that I wouldn't have been able to afford a $96 a month program. And like I said, I think it's important that everybody be able to get educated. And so it just made sense to refer people to you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that was pretty like a welcome, because I was struggling as well. I thought like this should be for free for everyone. But I sort of felt like a knife in the back all the time from people. Then they were going away and people were stealing and copying, and I was like, so like, should I continue this path? Because it's so difficult and financially struggling for me. And then it was really nice to see that there was some help from the outside. So thanks a lot. And that maybe made me go on a little bit longer with the donation-based program, but eventually I had to stop it to get more commitment from people to because it's not easy what we're doing, you know? Like, it's easy to stop, but if you've paid a little bit, then yeah, let's continue.
Exactly. I agree. And the truth is that there are now enough resources for free on YouTube and on Instagram, etc., and books. Like, the understanding is out there, whereas, 4 or 5 years ago, it was pretty limited. So I feel like those resources still exist for free. And those that want to really be guided through the process, I think a financial commitment makes sense just to have that energy exchange and have them be more committed.
Yeah, exactly. What I got from your work and from our work is that we both share sort of a common thing, that we have to go dive we have to dive back into the root problem behind it, which is usually, in my opinion, a fake belief or false belief, a belief of lack, something that we endured in childhood, seeing ourselves in the wrong way. What is your opinion on that?
People will say it's trauma, it's this and that, but what happens with trauma? Because you can have a situation, same traumatic situation happen for two people, and one of them it gets stuck. And I believe it gets stuck because we make a meaning or an interpretation about us because of that event. And so therefore I agree, it comes back to a belief that gets lodged deep in our nervous system that runs our identity. So even more than that, I would say it's a belief that forges an identity that isn't accurate for us, is not our highest aligned identity. And that identity, in my opinion, creates a type of filter on reality. And that filter distorts reality if the beliefs are false and negative, etc. And so we tend to attract and experience reality through a distorted filter. And our nervous system matches that distorted filter, and it's just a feedback loop. I expect this to happen, and then I experience this happening, and it just reinforces that identity that gets formed through false beliefs when we're young.
Yeah, that adds a lot of stress to the body. Constant cycle of fight or flight, and that's basically, I think, what the nervous system work is all about, and not just calming down, but also resolving the underlying issues. So, how did you make the connection? Like, when did it start for you that you really saw this connection between emotions and beliefs and symptoms or disease?
I was a bit stubborn. Like I knew this, and I knew this from working with people with chronic pain. But when it came to my own illness, there was a part of me that was stuck in victim consciousness that didn't want it to be my fault. I didn't want to have to change my mindset. I had this very real proof that I had this infection and toxin, and I think I had some type of validation for the first time in my life for feeling bad in this lab test and the authority figures. And I wasn't ready to let go of that validation for many years because as a child, I went through a lot of trauma that was invalidated. And so it was a real sticky point for me to shift into taking radical responsibility for my health. And I'll even say that when I started the nervous system work, I didn't take this full belief identity thing to heart yet. I was like, oh, it is the limbic system. It is malfunctioning, and I need to shift the function of my limbic system, and blah, blah, blah. And then I actually started coaching people, and I started to get a good mirror. Sorry, turn that off. A good mirror of myself through coaching others. I could see their beliefs, I could see their emotional patterns causing their limbic system to go haywire. And I realized that in order to help them have full healing, I needed to get to the root of what was driving their limbic system. And that helped me to really see that in my own healing process, there was still some digging to do. And eventually that caused me to launch what is called the Primal Trust Mentorship, the Level 2 Mentorship. It was a whole program based on recognizing the false identity, the false beliefs, the judgments that were keeping your brain retraining process from having its full outcome. So it was a long process for me. I had to have a lot of mirrors held up to me to be able to face my beliefs and face my own wounding and get beyond, first getting beyond the infection and the toxicity diagnosis, then getting beyond the limbic system impairment diagnosis, then even getting beyond the trauma diagnosis to get down into the root, which is what I say, separation from self, separation from source, separation from the truth of that which we are. So it was a long, humbling journey. I wish that I was like a quick learner that way and just was able to like right away figure that out. But the truth was, it took me many years.
Yeah, well, for me, the exact same thing. Yeah. I started coaching people and I started realizing things about from my about myself via them. And coaching was the best thing that I ever did. Like I did it for 5 years now. And every day someone new and or two people new and see what they were not telling to themselves, like the lies that we tell ourselves and the things that we don't want to look
Yes.
at, like the shadow. And I had a pretty big shadow because basically my entire identity was a shadow. Just this one aspect, maybe 1% of me. Look at me, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good. And the rest is like, oh no, I don't want to look at it. So yeah,
Yep,
I had
I
the
hear
exact.
that.
So then with the emotional work that we're doing, I noticed that
Yeah.
in the beginning, I was pushing people to process their emotions, but that did not really work that well. Sometimes I thought it worked, but they had a shutdown. Well, how I call it, a freeze. So now we do all kinds of preparations, not to really like journaling, for example, and somatic movement, not with the goal of releasing or crying or something like that, but rather with the goal to make the emotion okay in our limbic brain. That it's sort of like anger. Okay, it's not maybe not comfortable, but it's okay. Fear the same, shame the same, disgust the same. How are you doing that?
Yeah. Similarly, like I said, I originally launched this like level two mentorship, which is a deep dive into our emotional resistance. And I had a lot of kickback from a lot of people in that, like it was too much too soon. And I realized that I needed to give them a better toolkit of nervous system tools and practice creating space in the nervous system before we went and looked at the judgments and looked at the fears. And so I mapped out kind of a sequence of nervous system tools that seem to really work for people to get them ready to do the emotional work based on both my experience and watching clients, and found that if I could work with their vagus nerve complex for a little bit, if I could teach them just the basics of being able to shift the limbic state, if I could get them into their body just a little bit, and then give them even more than that, a framework for their parts or that internal family systems framework of basically split aspects of self, then they would be more equipped when they went into the emotion to not only have more capacity in the nervous system to handle what was coming up, but to also have a context for a part of me feels worthless. That's not all of me. A part of me feels this because I found for me and for myself, the flooding of worthlessness or unlovability or fear would hijack the whole brain. And if they didn't have a context of parts of their psyche that were split, then they could mistake that experience for the whole of them and it would be too much. So it was a common, I do a combination of nervous system tools and general educational context for parts work and trauma fragmenting before we go into process now.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it seems that we're doing similar things. I think it must be, otherwise it probably doesn't work that well. And but you also put in brain retraining. You've also mentioned that a few times. Like you mentioned the NRS and the lightning process. And in my own healing journey, I felt so gaslighted by that. And after that, I felt much, much worse because it was sort of like a toxic positivity thing. Like, stop, everything is all right. I'm good, and tomorrow I'm going to be to cycle or to work again. And the question was that after that, like, when do you start working again? And then when I said maybe next year, no, next week. And I pushed myself, and for me, it was very, very toxic. How are you looking at that?
I don't teach it that way. I agree with you that there is a common way of doing brain retraining out there that doesn't work for a lot of people. There are certain people that it does. It depends on your background, depends on if you've experienced gaslighting as a child. If you haven't, sometimes people are like, yeah, it feels better to think better feeling thoughts and see the best part of myself, and they don't have resistance. But people like you, people like me, brain retraining isn't just about thinking positively. It might be about retraining you to figure out what your needs are that day. So a practice would be visualizing the needs that you're experiencing and imagining meeting your needs that day. It's a very different type of brain retraining than unicorns and rainbows and everything's going to be great. Now, at some point in the journey, especially after we've resolved a lot of emotional resistance, there is this concept of what I would call dimensional shifting, or even like shifting consciousness, that there is a timeline where you have an identity that has never been sick, hurt, wounded, etc., that there is a sense of self out there to be found. And when the right time to find that comes, brain retraining can be very powerful to literally shift one's physiology very quickly. But that needs to be a process where you're willing to experience the self that truly was never injured. And that's what I call your primal trust self, the self that actually has always been connected to God, to source, to love. That also exists. And sometimes we need to meet our wounding and meet reality to a certain point before we can make that shift. But that's also available. Some people are able to make that shift earlier, that conscious jump early in the program. I see it. So there are many ways of doing brain retraining. I teach five different main ways. Actually, that meeting your needs would be a sixth way. And it's not always about toxic positivity. And you're right that sometimes for the psyche that hasn't been seen and understood, that can feel incredibly invalidating. It's like you're skipping a step of healing by just going into, I'm fine, my life is back. And it's like, wait a minute, you never found what's actually in here. The whole reason for getting you sick hasn't been discovered. Like, don't miss this beautiful, very potent, sacred process. And so it's a both and thing when it comes to brain retraining. It's a timing thing. It's very personal, depending on when someone can do that. But I would agree with you that there's a general attitude out there about self-directed neuroplasticity that for some can do more harm than good early on.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I actually love this explanation. It's the best one I've ever heard on the internet so far. And this is not even the internet. Well, but yeah, amazing. And I love the one about getting your needs met. It's really good. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I was already forgetting what I was wanting to say after this. But yeah, very strong tools. I love it. And now I have to cut because I'm sort of
Oh,
like.
that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, I just want to say to listeners out there who've learned brain retraining and it just felt so disresonant, just know that there's many, many ways of doing it. There's an algorithm behind brain retraining that does make sense, and how you actually, the specifics of how you implement it can vary widely. So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Because it might just be that you haven't learned a way to use that particular tool that fits where you're at in your journey.
Yeah.
Another way that I think is really important, so I'll just say this, is something I call aligned action, where you know that day, like you need to get these bills paid, and you just keep putting it off or whatever, or you've got to like get to the store. And it's something you absolutely have to do that day, but you're so full of resistance. Just brain retraining the steps of seeing it done is so helpful for the nervous system because you're setting it up to show exactly how this is going to get done. Now, that's still not like saying you're going to feel amazing and you're all better, but you are rehearsing the reality that you have to walk through that day and giving a sense of what's possible on a small level. So that's another way that I used it a lot. Like I had these two kids. They were really young. They would wake me up every day at like 6:30, 7 a.m. And I was like in overwhelm because I was so sick. I could hardly walk to the kitchen. And so sometimes before they would come in, I would brain retrain how I was going to greet them when they ran into my room. Okay, how can I give them a little bit of mom, even though I feel so yuck? I would just imagine smiling and hugging them and just saying, I'm so grateful to be with you today, and rehearsing the little things that I could do to make a difference in my life that I wanted to show up a little more consciously. It doesn't mean that I was like imagining like running around the block with my kids. I was imagining how I connected with them and reminded myself how I wanted to be more conscious. So it was little things that made a huge difference for me at the time. So I hope that's helpful to give more context.
Yeah, it's very good. I love it. I'm all ears. And yeah, we also, I mean, we're also dealing with lots of people, and we've also added in more stuff, like stuff that I did not need myself, but clients needed it, like for like you were mentioning the true self and embodying the truth, like all kinds of aspects of ourselves, and we do that now, like after a release, so that. The release, what we do is like we cry, we shiver, we shake, vomit, and then after that, bring back the truth. It's okay to get it all out. Yeah.
Love that.
And I prepared some more questions. And one I was actually very, very curious of because you use your doctor title. So you've got a doctor, PhD title, right?
I'm a doctorate in physical therapy, so it's an advanced training in orthopedic manual physical therapy.
Yes, so many of the clients that I speak, they have doctor titles, like PhD titles, and as well, so one of our coaches has, but they all sort of like reject that part of their life. Like they don't want to be called a doctor. They don't like the stress that came with it or the pressure, and I even like I was like what one coach of ours like, hey, do you want to use the doctor title? I think it's cool, but she said no. So why did you choose to use this?
You know, it's interesting. I've actually went back and forth. At one point, I was going to give up my license. And another point, I actually stopped using the title because I didn't want to come off to seem like I was part of the medical paradigm. But then I realized that it was something that was really important to me. It's a symbol to me of my dedication to learning and to how can I describe this? It's a symbol of a value that I have, of a mastery. I like mastering things. I wanted to master physical therapy, and I earned that title. I don't practice clinically. I am fine if people just call me Kat or Kathleen. I don't need you to call me Dr. Kat, but for me, it's a representation of my value system, which is mastery in of what of the things that I love. So yeah, it's interesting. I still go back and forth. Like, I don't want it to mean, I'm above somebody or an authority figure. To me, it's just that I am very dedicated to that which I'm learning, and that was a symbol of that for me.
Yeah, and I think it's part of who you are, and the training that you've underwent, and you earned it. It's not easy to get a title like that. So yeah, thank you for telling me that. So I had that one in the back of my mind, but now like a more serious question. What do you think is the biggest obstacle for someone who is currently having a chronic disease? They got it maybe after COVID, a COVID infection just a few years ago. And there is so much information out there, so many different strategies and tools. What do you think is the biggest obstacle to overtake for them?
I think that we have information overload, and it actually misses the forest for the trees, that whole concept. Right now, the more that I learn about chronic illness, the more I see it all as an immune confusion imbalance, that the immune system on a deep level gets thrown out of whack, whether it's long COVID, Lyme, chronic fatigue, etc. The thing that people don't understand, in my opinion, is that the immune system is literally reflecting, it's acting out the way that you respond to life itself. Are you oversensitive? Are you in protection? Are you rehearsing, extra rehearsing things that happen? Are you perfectionistic? Are you on guard? That creates a lot of feedback loop to the psyche, and the psyche feeds the immune system. And so your immune system is a reflection of your relationship with life itself. And if you could bring it back to how is my relationship with life itself, with my partner, with my kids, with my community, with myself, how can I harmonize my relationship with life itself? That behavior shift, that awareness shift, I believe translates all the way down into the immune level. And so it's less about the tools, it's less about the vitamins, it's less about the supplements. And although those things are helpful, they really are helpful in decreasing inflammation and things like that, it's a general set point of interaction with life itself that needs to be attended to. And the obstacle is that we miss that basic awareness of how are we interacting with the world, how are we thinking about the world, and we're so caught up in all of the information that we don't change the original set point and we get busy doing everything else.
Okay, thank you. Hey, and to look at it from a more spiritual perspective, I don't know what happened, but in the last 5, 6 years, all of a sudden, almost everyone has a chronic disease. It didn't used to be that way. Like some say, it could be the radiation with the Wi-Fi, or all the devices, or the food, or maybe we're entering a new timeline in the universe, or something like that. What do you think is the reason behind this?
It's a big question, Daniel. But
Sorry, I didn't write
if
it down when
yeah,
I.
no. I love it. This is what I love exploring. Now, I don't know, but my thoughts are that our whole system has gotten overstimulated. And I believe that the regulation of our system depends on our connection with our true self. Our ability to sort through false beliefs. I think that we are overstimulated in so many ways between Wi-Fi, between our phones, between all of the information. We are filled with toxicity, which is also an incoherent field in our body that almost from like an energetic electrical standpoint, it doesn't feel like people are literally plugged in to their heart field and plugged into the earth. That our wires are getting frayed and there's too much dissonance in the electrical field of our sense of self. And if we were to spend more time unplugging, getting into nature, nature is the healing balm. It has the frequency, the reminder of how life works, how so what solutions are needed, who we are. We're unplugged. We have become unplugged in a multitude of ways. And so I think that's a core thing that I see, this dissonance in our field, toxically, Wi-Fi, information, lack of connection, we're all in isolation, and lack of nature time that's just been a tipping point for our body and for our nervous system.
Yeah, that sounds the most logical explanation of everything. I do like to think
But I
about
don't.
the Aquarius time and sometimes, but then it was just like maybe it's all just make believe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hear you on that too. Like we could be going through some type of massive upgrade, and in that upgrade, we need to meet our wounding, and it's just coming out to be seen. And illness is one of the best ways to get us to look at what's been stuck in our DNA for eons to be cleared and healed. So I also have that belief system wandering through my mind too.
Thank you. Is there anything else that you would like to share, or maybe something that you found out that you're just like, this is amazing, the world must know this?
I've really been diving into the concept of multiple timelines lately, like literally multiple realities that our consciousness, that there is a multiverse, that we are, our consciousness has a filter of reality, and what we are experiencing is a feedback loop for our identity as it currently stands, and that multiple experiences are available to us depending on our feedback loop of identity. Maybe it's because I've done a lot of Dr. Joe Dispenza work, I've done a lot of like quantum research, but I'm really interested in how people sometimes have a radical shift in their health almost overnight when they get some deep identity shift. Sometimes you read about that with near-death experiences. Sometimes people have very profound experiences with a meditation connecting with what they might describe as source. Sometimes people like hit a rock bottom and they just make a big decision about who they are, and it's almost like reality rearranges itself around that all of a sudden. I'm so curious about tapping into the potential of our consciousness with this multiverse and the reality of life itself. So I don't know what the answers are, but I spend a lot of my time meditating and pondering on that. And I can say I feel like I'm living in a completely different timeline than 7 years ago. I mean, my life is so radically different. I can't even believe that I'm here. It does feel like a quantum leap. And I've done so much work on my identity the last 7 years that I think, yeah, I'm living in a different reality construct than I did before. So I'm thinking about that, but I don't have any like profound teachings or certainty. It's more just something I question, and I'm open to experiencing the mystery and magic of the quantum realm.
I liked it a lot. I also shared in something from my side is I started having visions 20 years ago or something like that, and I knew already that I was going to get ill, and so I was so busy with my health and exercise, and I thought like, oh, what's health, six pack, muscled, and good food, good diet, supplements. That's a, but then anyway, I got sick anyway. But then I already knew that I was coming out, and started having a lot more visions, only about negative stuff mostly. And but some of them did not happen anymore. But I got healthy because I believed in it because I was bedbound and I couldn't really talk for many years, so that became a struggle. But some of the visions that I saw did not happen. Like, I'm sure they're not going to happen in the future anymore. They're gone. So I think that we can leap between timelines.
Yeah, 100% had a similar experience. And I do feel like I'm in a different trajectory than I was before. Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah, so, that's where like the brain retraining piece, like back to that, can be really hard to believe something is possible. But if multiple timelines exist, then you're actually unlimited. And it doesn't mean, you don't resolve and meet the wounding that's in there. Like there is work to do. It's both somatic meeting of our wounding and questioning the beliefs that we've held and being willing to see a vision for ourselves that's more aligned, a higher, more aligned. I always kind of intend in my meditations, I want to find the highest potential expression of myself while I'm here in this lifetime. I'm open to that. What is that? Reveal that to me so that both are true and I'm willing to meet what's there that's mine to my responsibility to heal. Both are true. It's not one or the other. We have a spiritual bypass world and we have like the somatic trauma, never-ending trauma world. Both I think are needed for our ultimate alchemical experience.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you're saying something very important. Like, because the trauma work is always getting, it's always there. It will never disappear, I think. So how would you, I mean, a lot of clients, they did emotional healing for a year and they thought like there's still stuff coming out. So you then redirect them to also the alternate timeline, like with a visualization or something like that, to get them out of that negative state.
And I think you get to the point with the trauma and the emotional healing that you just develop more capacity, that you're up for it. You're like, okay, this is in there too. And I know how to play this game. I know how to meet this, and I'm willing to see my life beautiful. And even in that beautiful life, it doesn't mean that there's no more wounding. It just means that you're able to dance with it. You're able to dance the messy human dance and the express the divine at the same time. We think that this emotional stuff is like bad, wrong, negative, gotta finish it, gotta get rid of it. But we're here to feel, we are here to experience, and from that depth of feeling, we also appreciate the life even more. And I know for me now, like if I can get to the point of like true grief about something, oh my gosh, I feel like my guts have been massaged afterwards. It feels amazing to move that energy through my system. It is aligning, it is life-giving. It feels truly like those tears are life-giving waters from Mother Earth herself. And I come out more whole. I don't want to miss out on that. And I'm up for it.
Beautifully said. Thank you very much. So
Thank you, Dan.
I think everyone knows you and knows your website. But I'll put the link to your website in the description and on YouTube, and I'll also maybe link your Instagram account to it so that everyone can find out more about you and what you're offering.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Kidd.
Thank you, Daniel.